Underwriting support for the Book Show podcast on WAMC.org comes from Northshire Bookstore, Manchester, Vermont, and Saratoga, New York. An independent bookstore offering books, author events, gifts for children and adults, and more. Northshire.com. And the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a master's degree in English with a concentration in literature studies and an MFA in creative writing. strose.edu/gradprograms.
Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. John Waugh is an acclaimed theater critic, the son of actor Bert Waugh, and since 1992, he's been the senior drama critic at The New Yorker magazine. He's the author of such books as Tennessee Williams' Mad Pilgrimage of the Flesh and his brand new Joyride. The book is a collection of Waugh's New Yorker profiles and reviews that introduces readers to such makers of contemporary drama as Arthur Miller, Tony Kushner, Wallace Shawn, Harold Pinter, David Mamet, Mike Nichols, and August Wilson. In its juxtaposition of biographical detail and critical analysis, Joyride explores not only the lives of the theatricals, but the liveliness of the stage worlds they have created. It is a great pleasure to welcome John Waugh to this week's book show. John, thank you very much for being with us.
Fun to be here.
This is a collection. This book is a collection of your writings for The New Yorker and looks at so many different things. What is it like to put something like this together, to look at decades worth of work?
Well, it's fun for me because it's sort of my envoi to 21 years as the New Yorker's senior drama critic, which I'm very proud to say is the longest in the history of the magazine. And for me, it's not just a collection, but its intention is really to put the context, to give the theater, the American theater primarily, a larger context, because we generally see plays in the context of no context. And my feeling is that although we certainly need better plays, we also need better audiences, people who have more information and for whom, if they knew more about the theater or the writers that dominate our culture, they would be more interested. So what I've tried to do here is to take just the playwrights and directors, profiles of playwrights and directors, and my response to their work in review form, so to create a synergy between the profile and the review. And in that way, it's sort of a rear guard action to, you know, this thing, Tallulah Bankhead once was approached by an eager young actress about advice. And Tallulah said, "Don't be an actress, darling, be an audience." And it's a sort of an attempt to push that, push the readers or the potential theatergoers into another place by just providing the kind of detail and the kind of proximity that only the New Yorker in our culture has created a form where one can do that.
The book is broken up into three parts. Part one is playwrights, part two is productions, and part three is directors. So let us begin with playwrights, especially since, as we mentioned in the introduction, you're also the author of the National Book Award finalist Tennessee Williams' Mad Pilgrimage of the Flesh. So when you look at what that context should be regarding playwrights, why choose the ones that you have chosen in the book?
Well, generally speaking, the ones that I've chosen, which are Arthur Miller, David Mamet, August Wilson, Neil LaBute, Sarah Rule, those people are, and Wallace Shawn, those people on my mind, by my aesthetic, are the most important working playwrights. And so I've, you know, it's a way of deepening one's knowledge of them, you know. And I've been lucky enough historically to, like for instance, the beginning profile is one I did of Arthur Miller. Now, it's Arthur Miller's centenary. And if you're interested, for instance, in Death of a Salesman, my profile takes you with Miller to the cabin that he built in Connecticut in order to write the first, to write Death of a Salesman. He built it and with his tools still in the cabin, he'd never built a cabin before, he sat down to a desk, which was really a door, and wrote the first act of Death of a Salesman in 8 hours. Now, to get all that information, to hear Miller's voice, to walk with him, to have that described, which was my privilege, only can enhance the sense of the experience, the theatrical excitement of discovery, and it takes you, that particular profile, takes you into the gestation of the play and the changes of the play. And I'm proud to say that Miller thought it was the best thing ever written about him, his stuff. But I was just thrilled to be in his company for the couple of days that it took to report that piece. But my general brief on The New Yorker, both as a critic and a profiler, in fact, one is an extension of the other, is to take the theater writing out of the reading room and into the green room, to bring the reader closer to the theatrical experience, as I've known it both as the child of a famous stage performer and as somebody who's written for the theater and helped to run two repertory companies. I mean, the struggle and the accomplishment and the general fun of theater doesn't, generally speaking, get into a lot of the reportage about it. And as we are seeing in the culture now with the decline of newspapers, there's also a great decline in how the theater, if the theater is reported at all. I mean, unless you're reading about divorces or, that kind of lifestyle article. There's very little reportage about the nature of the art and the artists and their own struggle to express themselves, which is my interest, and which has a historical basis in, being the son of a great comedian. But that's what I do, and there's just very, very little of that in the culture. There's a sort of my goal is to keep the theatricals, such as they are, in the discussion, not to lose that very important part of our culture or lose the discussion of it, And so that's my job description as I see it, to sort of put, it's like when you go to an optometrist and you're checking your eyes, just to put another lens in the eyes of the audience to both interpret the plays and to sort of see more clearly the world out of which they came.
John Noir is the author of the new book, Joyride, Show People and Their Shows. He's also the author of Tennessee Williams, A Biography. In the piece on Arthur Miller, there's a line in there where he's talking about his impulse for the cabin that you mentioned. He said the impulse was to sit in the middle of it, shut the door, and let things happen. Did he know that Willie Loman was going to happen?
Well, what he says to me in the article is that he only knew two sentences. One was Willie, and the other was I've come back. And to Miller, that spoke the tragedy in a nutshell, because if a salesman can't get out of Yonkers, he says to me, it's like an actor saying, it's okay, I can't speak. So one of the things I think that the sort of general public doesn't understand is that very often you don't outline a play like you outline an essay. Sometimes you just, letting it happen is exactly what happens. You dream it. You dream it up. It comes to you. That you, in the second paragraph of the one you quoted, Miller says that he simply let them speak, and he was like a stenographer. And he says, he emphasizes it, they were actually speaking to him, and he was taking it down. He's not the only playwright who has said something like that. And to the sort of the unwashed, that seems very odd and maybe even pretentious, but it's actually very literal. I mean, Pinter, talking about his plays, which come entirely out of the unconscious, he said he just followed, his phrase was, quote-unquote, followed behind his characters. to see what they did. And I've even had that happen in a small way. I wrote a novel in the 70s called The Autograph Hound. And one day I had been thinking about an autograph collector who came up to me and seemed to know more about my life than I did. He knew more, my sister. He knew where she lived. He knew her marital circumstances. How did he know that? One day I sat down at my typewriter and I started to type. And I wrote about 5 pages. And the 5 pages that I wrote are the 5 pages that are initially appear in the published novel. I mean, they just came. They arrived. Where it came from, I mean, I was worrying about it. I was thinking about it. But how that voice came, I think there's an element of mystery and magic in the creation of these plays. I mean, there's a lot of trial and error. But you're sort of feeling your way in the dark, or maybe a better metaphor would be scratching at a sort of coal seam and finding a soft spot and just pursuing it and keeping digging when you find no resistance, you know?
You mentioned a moment ago about how being a critic is an extension of being a profiler.
Rather the other way around. It's being a profiler is an extension of being a critic. The idea is to bear better witness to the theater and the business of theater.
That background, when you go in to see an individual production, and as I said, the productions make up the second part of the book, where you talk about productions such as Carousel and Company and Oklahoma and Arcadia.
You know, but I should say that this is a book called Joyride. So the ones that I'm writing about are productions and plays or musicals, which gave me particular joy and insight. I learned something, but either about the craft or myself, they were, in my landscape, sort of seminal.
So does that profiling help you in that understanding?
Absolutely. And not only does it help me, what I try to do in reviews, in fact, it's always been my attempt when I started writing reviews on underground papers where they had an enormous amount of space, my idea was something different than the ordinary review, because I of course you have to give an opinion, but I wanted to include, and the New Yorker allowed me to do this to a T, more information. You have to review the play, but theater historical information about the playwright or the history of the play when it first came out, or the struggle to make the play happen, so that the reader not only gets an experience of the play, but has an experience of the theater culture out of which it came. That's the goal.
You have alluded to your lineage a couple of times of being the son of Bert Lahr, of course, the great actor and stage actor and comedian. And how much of your thoughts of the business of entertainment, of show people and their shows, comes from both his great power but also his great struggles?
Well, I think that's a good question, and it's both. I mean, first of all, you understand if you live in a let me put it this way. It's important to understand that criticism is a life without risk. A critics only risk their opinion. And when you live in a household of a performer, and then you yourself either write plays or novels or biographies, as I do, there's a huge difference in the sort of level of risk involved. And if you keep that in mind, what I just said, it means that you both have to approach the art as a critic with a certain amount of humility, and also a special vocabulary. I mean, it's very important to be penetrating, but not annihilating. And it's very easy, if you've got the power of the pen, to embarrass or shame or dismiss glibly. And that's not right, and it's bad for the theater, and it's bad for the person who's actually doing the writing. I mean, I think of actors as athletes of the spirit. What they do, in a way, their prowess is in my view, a kind of heroism, to use a phrase of Tennessee Williams. It's not, I mean, I don't want to pitch it too high, but the amount of work and the amount of endeavor, the purity of the commitment and the time and the obsession, takes on a kind of heroism, I think, because they're after a truth. They're after trying to serve an idea. And, very often, in some cases, like my father, who premiered Waiting for Godot on Broadway in 1956, they're taking part in something where they either don't altogether understand it, or they know they're going into very choppy water for a good purpose, but it's going to be it won't necessarily serve them well in the public eye, but they believe in the project. So that there is a sort of heroism in it, and that's why it's, to me, great to chronicle it.
Where does the actor fit in with, obviously, the production, but also with the director and the playwright?
Well, the actor is the interpreter, isn't he? He's the messenger. And sometimes it depends on the actor and the intuition. My father, being an old vaudeville and burlesque guy, used to say, I give the director 1 week, and then I'm on my own. In some cases, the director doesn't do a whole lot, or he does it. It depends on the language of the director. I mean, Al Pacino told me about Mike Nichols that he sort of body languaged him. He didn't really say very much, but the intelligent presence and the kind of paternal embrace of Nichols with a production sort of guided it. And Ingmar Bergman, who's also one of the profiles I've done, I mean, his plays, which I saw in Sweden, where he was head of the theater, the Kungliga, the National Theater of Sweden, two of the three plays that I saw at his theater are two of the greatest productions I ever saw in my life. And with him, it's more like fly fishing. He will not give an actor a note until the psychological moment he feels the actor is able to receive it. And then, rather like fly fishing, he has to set that. He watches his words very carefully. And he needs to get the agreement of the actor. He can't, and some directors try to force you to do what they want, but that never works because then the actor won't own it. But if you can get the actor to own the idea, it will stay forever in the production. So there are different styles. I mean, Kazan, for instance, which you can read in my biography, was absolutely crucial to the actors. And he approached each one with a different strategy. He sometimes put actors against each other in the production because that tension was right for the theme of the play. So it's a fascinating political game that's being played within the theater about how to get actors to convey the meaning or embody the meaning of the character to therefore convey the meaning of the play.
John Lahr is the author of the new book, Joyride, Show People and Their Shows. The book is published by W.W. Norton. In the time that you covered theater for The New Yorker, what age do you feel that you reported through? When you look through the time, you were sort of seeing the changing of the guard, right?
It's often said that critics make theater, which is not true. Critics are made by theater. And on my watch, there are many, many interesting events. I mean, first and foremost, of course, was Tony Kushner's Angels in America, which was the third play I reviewed in 1992, the two plays together in Los Angeles. Went backstage for that one, so you get a real sense of the event. Mm-hmm. The Wally Schon's Designated Mourner, which predicted long before 9/11, and also the increasing barbarity of American culture, the Philistinism, which I don't think we have to look too far afield to see in full voice at the moment. All of that the movement from promise to barbarity on some level, I think you can see in a lot of the plays. Another, I think, outstanding young playwright is Sarah Rule. Again, a different kind of playwright, but all these people really are speaking to the culture. And I have to say in a special way, because most of the, in our digital age, almost a great deal of what we receive as stories are corporate agreements on movies and television. And the theater still is the place of the individual narrative voice, which is why, which is its thrill. I mean, it isn't a majority art form, but that minority voice saying the unsayable, talking truth to power, is incredibly important. I mean, I wish of the I also had sort of Sondheim to debate on my watch, and I stopped doing the theater reviews, although I write two profiles a year for the New Yorker. Still had one last week on Julianne Moore. I would have liked to have come out of retirement to write about Hamilton, because there you have a watershed musical, moving the musical beyond where Sondheim took it, and so that we now have a new idiom, rap music, a writer who understands the history of the musical, and in some ways Hamilton is built around a conventional structure, but somehow it has created a narrative universe, a moral universe, which my argument is that a lot of the Sondheim plays don't do that. They're lyric heavy. And somehow the musical is telling a story in a fresh new way, and in bringing the world back, the world we live in its idiom, in its movement, and in its multicultural aspects, in the art form, and reinvigorating the musical, which is of course a very strong and fecund part of American theater.
Is there a special excitement for you of a person who has written about show people and their shows to see a talent like Lin-Manuel Miranda and see Hamilton the musical? And I know when I was in the audience, I'm watching the show and I'm thinking, this is damn near perfect. Is that an excitement?
Oh, of course. I mean, you know, there are lots of it. For me, I'm ravished by a lot of things. I mean, that's certainly an excitement. It's wonderful to see prowess in any form. I love show-stopping numbers where the audience is just driven crazy with pleasure. I love Dame Edna Everage when at her best, or when Stritch, God bless her, was, you know, I co-wrote that Elaine Stritch at Liberty with her.
Right.
When she stopped a show, people didn't know why, but they were on their feet. And they, with great performances, when you look back on them, they're sort of how you measure your life. I mean, for me, it's in theater. I mean, I also happen to have been a Yankee fan, so I remember Yogi Berra, or I remember Pearl Bailey walking as Hello Dolly, walking across the Horseshoe stage, and people literally throwing their coats on the Horseshoe stage so she could walk on their coats. It was mayhem. I remember looking down and realizing I was standing on my chair. So the moments of wild pleasure in the theater, I've seen them. I've been there. They don't happen that often now, generally speaking, because that style of performance has, or that ambition to stop a show, is not part of what musical theater is about. That if you stop a show, you're stopping the story, which ain't good. Part of the pleasure of writing Joyride, in fact, it's, you know, The New Yorker was my joyride for 21 years, but I like, you know, I did find, and I do find, joy in these people and in the productions that I'm reporting on. Of course, there were lots of times when I didn't enjoy myself, but I don't see why history has to know about that as much as celebrating the times when it all worked.
John Lahr is the author of the new book, Joyride, Show People and Their Shows. The book is published by W.W. Norton. John Lahr, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much.
I enjoyed myself. Thank you very much.
Again, the new book is Joyride by John Lahr. It is published by Norton. We enjoy hearing from our listeners about the show. You can email us at book@wamc.org, and you can listen again to this or find past book shows at wamc.org. Sarah LeDuc produces our program. Bookmark us for next week, and thanks for listening. For The Book Show, I'm Joe Donahue.